Hello, friends, and happy Friday. Welcome to the Friday Conversation. This week, we're just hanging out. No topic in mind or anything, so we'll just kind of wing it and see what happens. As Susanna just said, these are usually the funnest ones. So start off with some introductions. Thomas, will you start us off? I'm glad you can make it.
Thanks for having me. It's good to – it's been a while. I'm Thomas J. Devins, the author of the Fall of Emrose series and now – also the Vermin of the Old Empire series of novellas.
Nice. Very nice. Want to hear more about that. And Alex.
I'm Alex. I'm hopefully going to be the published author of Carpentry in the Elven Forest soon.
Nice. And Paramita.
Hello, everyone. I'm Paramita. I like to read in a variety of genres. I'm a member of the Page Chewing Forum. I just finished rereading A Song of Ice and Fire, which I'm super excited about. And I've just started Nobel Prize in Literature 2024, Who Will Win Reading Project.
Fun fact, since we started recording, Paramita read a whole book in the last minute and 23 seconds. And Joshua.
I'm Joshua. I'm another member of the Page Chewing Forums. I haven't done anything lately that is interesting to tell, so.
I doubt that. And Susanna.
Hello, my name is Susanna Imaginario. I'm the author of the series Timelessness, and I run a very, very small YouTube channel called Name of the Weird. Den of the Weird. We were just talking about Name of the Wind, not Name of the Weird. Great start.
Yeah, it's been that kind of day. I'm not sure about all you guys, but man, it's been a day and it's been a week. But glad to be here. And so Paramita, I have a bone to pick with you because you recommended Name of the Wind to me. I went out and bought it.
Yeah.
Against my better judgment.
That was a
mistake. And then you tell me, I wish you wouldn't have bought that book. And I'm like, and then you made a post on the forum saying everyone should read it. So what gives? What's going on?
So my fear is because your favorite series are things like the Dandelion Dynasty or the Second Apocalypse. I'm not sure whether you like the Name of the Wind. Hmm. If you are somebody who loves Harry Potter, if you're somebody who loves Lord of the Rings, if you're somebody who likes Stormlight Archive, I would be more confident of the recommendation. But with your favorites, I'm just not sure whether it will be like, I hate this, or it's meh, or it's wow. Like, I just don't know what will happen. It's not a confident recommendation. I would be very, very happy if you read it and you loved it.
I'm predicting a meh.
I don't know.
Wow, wow.
Definitely a meh.
Wow. Thank you, Joshua, for managing my expectations.
Why do you think it'd be a meh, Joshua?
Because I think so far we've been very close in our tastes about books, and it was a meh for me. So it's YA either hits or just completely misses the mark for me. And this is one of the few that is in between that I felt like it's predictable, but it was cozy to read because he tells the stories. So I was like, okay, it's an in-between book between something terrible, something good, or whatever. It was a meh book. It didn't compel me to read the second one. That I can tell you that for sure.
What about the rest
of you?
That's not very encouraging though. Like, because I think the first book has to pull you in, right? It has to like grab you and make you want to read the rest. But I think the series not being finished and probably, I mean, who knows if it will ever be finished. I think that's kind of a deterrent too. Like, unless it can be like read as a standalone.
The angle I was going to come from is how do you feel about things ending on a cliffhanger with no hope of the next episode. Because that's how I feel about it at the moment. I finished book two, and book three is nowhere in sight.
Have you watched Twin Peaks?
Yes.
Cliffhanger. I mean, did you like Twin Peaks?
Up until the end. I also watched My Name Is Earl, which finished on an enormous cliffhanger.
Yeah.
So. Most annoyingly, because I really liked My Name Is Earl.
What about you, Thomas? Have you read that one?
I read both of them a while ago now. Back when I was actually listening to audiobooks and going through them very quickly. But I go through them a lot slower now. But I liked it. It was enjoyable. I'm not concerned with the next book. If it comes out, I'll read it or listen to it. But I could take it or leave it.
And Susanna, what about you? Have you read that one?
I read both, yeah. A long time ago as well. I have no hopes for the third book, but I am fine with that. I was never very invested. Kind of like Joshua, yeah, it was okay. It was, you know, above average, very well written. But it's still YA, and yeah, it's. I enjoyed the second book more. It's different, but it's very meandering, very long, and there's no way that story is going to be left in just another book. Which again, for me, it's fine. I mean, I was telling Paramita that if I wish I could tell Russell something like, you know, it's okay, admit you made a mistake, just publishing two books, how many books are, you know, necessary. Because I think the fans will still be happier with two books than none. You know, okay, so the symmetry is screwed. Okay, nothing is perfect. I think we'd still enjoy the story.
It does bother me, though, knowing that we will probably, well, who knows if we'll ever get a third book, but with it being so uncertain, it does bother me because, like, with The Song of Ice and Fire, I just could not, I couldn't shake that feeling, like, I'm never going to know how this ends. Like,
really, oh, I that one I really need to know how it ends. Please.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm a lot more invested there. And I have my theories, so I need to know. Again, this is all Paramita's fault. She got me thinking about Song of Ice and Fire again. Yeah, terrible influence.
Most things are, yeah.
Yeah, most things are her fault. Yeah. She's...
I will point out that I did not cry at all during this entire time that King Killer was discussed. I was very brave. And A Song of Ice and Fire is a really, really good series. And I would just love to know why do people think there's an hold up without going into personal things and health things, which I find very, very distasteful. But just on a purely writing level, what's the holdup? Is it too many plot lines? We doubled the POVs in books 4 and 5, roughly, from books 3. Is it he's pushed some stuff from book 5, which has to go into book 6? And is it just, I don't know, too much happening in too many places that needs to coalesce in book 6 in order to wrap this up? Is it just gone out of, spiraled out of control? Or is it a motivation thing? Did the show have a negative impact? Oh, that was the third point. Were some parts of the show ending things that Martin had as endgame in mind? And seeing the reaction to that sort of was, I mean, I just want to know on a writing level, what do people think who've read the series or who watched the show? Why is it so delayed?
I think that it's because of the show, because of the hype of the show, and maybe there were some similarities at the end. But same time, it's still because of the show, for better or good, it was such a big thing that, I don't know, I think it probably it doesn't want the stress of going through it. You know, it's, the book is probably written, it's finished, and yeah, it just maybe will be published.
That feedback from the last season must have been like really mm-hmm. tough for him mm-hmm. because even though they changed a lot, if that ending would be similar in some way, he has to rewrite everything according to people who, yeah, mm-hmm. most of them hated the ending. But I don't think it's going to be the writing itself, because I don't mm-hmm. know for Thomas or Alex, but I don't think anybody in this group hated the writing in the books so far.
Yeah. Writing is not a problem.
I enjoyed reading them until they stopped happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I only read the first one because I knew that they weren't happening. There's a lot of other books I have to read. I figure I'll move on to those ones for now.
Preemptive DNF. Nice.
I think but a lot of it too is oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Parmita.
No, you're missing out because the books are quite different from the show after about season 3. So, yeah. Okay.
I definitely plan to get around to them at some point. Just they're not at the top of the TBR right now.
I think what hurt it for me too is it's so close to the show, at least for the first couple of books, that you already knew what was going to happen. So it kind of took away that surprise and made me regret not reading it before watching the show. Like I kept planning to and then never got to it.
So for me, I've never seen the show today. Whatever little clips I've seen are from YouTube shorts or from YouTube videos bashing the ending or things like that. I've never actually seen the show, not even one episode. And it's a personal decision. It's just I don't do very well with graphic depiction of violence and sex on screen.
Yeah.
I'm not comfortable with it at the level that it happens Game of Thrones. The books. And it's a part of the reason why I put away the books. But, I mean, my friend, who's an ardent A Song of Ice and Fire fan, at Susanna's level, she said that the books are different, which is true. What Susanna said is 100% true. Even in book one, I would say it's different because, for me, at least, like, this is how my brain works. The way I read the language, where even when some very horrifying things happen, is not the same as when I would watch it. The response to two is just very, very different for me. So anyway, I understand though why, but I knew main things, like I knew something that happens in book one. Book two, I didn't know so much. Book three, a key thing I knew from the beginning. Three key things I knew from the beginning. And I was still surprisingly able to enjoy them a lot, especially on reread, because I thought the writing was done very, very well. I should qualify this a bit. When we say great writing, there are many metrics. One of them is very good vocabulary or very lyrical prose. With Martin, what it is it is tonally apt to the story he is telling. So when he's doing transitions, when he's cutting between scenes, when he's focusing on a particular character view, it is very, very spot on. And it has a certain cinematic quality, maybe, which is why it translated so well into television. I don't know. And all of that was very good. So this brings me back to the question, at the point where when the books and the show started deviating, was it bad from the very beginning? Because I've read from some people that after 4, it was like season 5, which is supposed to be an adaptation of books 4 and 5, already was deviating, and then 6 even more. And then 7 even more. And so then naturally it, it went to hell in the last, especially with the less number of episodes. And I've heard from other people that no, after season 7 was pretty okay, and then season 8 was the one where it all went to hell. So for people who've sort of seen the show, what is your feeling?
That's a
pretty
lot.
Much that, yeah.
I think season 6 is when you could tell, like about halfway through season 6, they started like using dick jokes and things like that. And it just, you knew once the dick jokes started, it was like, okay, something's not right. Like this seems weird.
The conversations.
Some of the storylines seemed like in the same kind of theme and tone, and other ones you could tell were kind of different. They just felt like things just changed, and I didn't know anything about the books at the time, but you definitely notice a difference. Season 7 and then especially season 8, but those two last seasons were pretty rough. Pretty rough, but
I felt like a joke. Felt like an absolute joke. The cutting, like forgetting to remove that cup and leaving it in the finished edition, it's totally baffles me today. I have it on Blu-ray, and it's like, why is that cut there? Why? And that's a small thing, but it is huge if you look at it like, okay, that's the only thing I can focus on right now. But like you said, the conversations, I loved every conversation with every character in the books. Even if it goes all the way to hell, it's like, I'm living with these characters, and then you get to see them evolve, and then in the later seasons they change from Martin's writing to their writing, and it's just not as clever, not as well written, not as eloquent. It doesn't belong there. The characters have similar tropes or like try to stay in character, but it just doesn't work. Even Tyrion, like the favorite for everybody, it's like you're just rehashing Tyrion, his old stuff. Why? Where is this going? So the series, yeah. What could have been? Mm-hmm. I mean, House of Dragons picks up like, oh, so something can be okay again. But yeah. Having seen House of Dragons, it felt like they've done too much damage for me, at least, to the IP.
I kind of felt with House of Dragons like the whole thing was being carried by Matt Smith. Yeah, it is Matt Smith, isn't it?
Could be.
And if he wasn't in it, I'm not sure it would be quite as good. Or if the person playing his role wasn't playing it the way he played it, it wouldn't be as good, I should say. Because now I think back to it, I can't really think of another really strong character that leaps out as doing anything meaningful.
I think that Fire and Blood I think that was definitely written loosely so it can be adapted, which is pretty smart.
Yeah,
but I think that was the intention for those stories to not be too specific, so they could adapt it and it not be, you know, picked apart by fans like us, like what's different and what's not. But I'm curious for Alex, Susanna, and Thomas, what does Martin do with his writing that you pick up on that maybe readers like me wouldn't? Like what have you learned from him, or what things has he done that's made you go, oh, okay, like that's something that I'm going to incorporate in my own writing or technique or anything at all?
He's very cinematic. He establishes scenes very well, and the dialogue is to perfection. He puts the right amount of tags when they're needed, the right amount of expositions when it's needed. It's like watching a movie, but on a film, but in writing form. For me, anyway, that's how I see it. And I try to be succinct and make sure that I create a good scene. It was a huge influence.
His multi POV style of writing is something I like to do as well, especially in the way of doing a chapter for each POV. And every chapter is a different POV. You don't have two chapters following each other for the same person. Although I've then broken that rule in my latest book because I've run out of POVs because I've joined them all together.
Yeah. What about you, Thomas?
Since I only read the first book and probably about 10 years ago, I couldn't really say. And as far as influences go, I was mostly Abercrombie and Erickson, which I read before any Song of Ice and Fire books. So that was a bigger influence on me, and I can't really remember too much of Game of Thrones.
Suzanne, you mentioned dialogue. What makes good dialogue? What's is it the flow, or is it what do you look for in dialogue specifically?
Yes, the flow. It has to kind of make sense. Sometimes you read books where dialogue is almost like, I mean, that person could be talking just by itself. It's disjointed. That's hard to explain. He's just flows so well. And of course, no one talks like that. You know, it just only works in books, but that's why I say it's cinematic, because it, you know, it always goes to the point. And yeah, I don't know how to describe it. Good dialogue.
Sometimes it's like you know it when you read it kind of thing. Like it's, you know, it's one of those things, so.
One thing which this is purely just a reader perspective. When I read Martin, even more Rothfuss, but since we're talking about Martin, I think one of the hallmarks of a good writer is when plot progression has really slowed down or almost halted. Even then, if they can keep you going. And Martin has that quality to his writing. Mm-hmm. Because one of the things about Feast and Dance is it's all... I think notionally, we don't know because we don't have the payoff, which will come in wins. But notionally, these two books are about setting chess pieces, moving them about, trying to show how complicated, even more complicated it is compared to what we thought in Flash and Storm. And there are chapters after this. There are new POVs, there are returning POVs, some of them go on a bit, quite a bit, I can feel that some of them are going on a bit. One classic example is Brienne, her chapters in Feast, some of them do go on a bit, but even when they go on a bit, you can still sort of post hoc rationalize why they are there. And yes, they could have been cut, but some of it could have been edited down. I don't think cut is the right word. Maybe they could have been edited down, but they still have thematic meaning, because this entire, say this without spoiling. So Brienne is on a quest whose culmination is already known to the reader. So the question then comes, why is Martin writing this? Why is he giving us multiple POV chapters from this character's point of view if we know what the result of her quest is? And it's, I mean, this is my reading. I'm keen to hear from other readers as well. It's to do with the theming in the series. The series is called A Song of Ice and Fire. It's not called Game of Thrones, which is the show. And I think it has a very powerful anti-war theming. And part of what that piece does after the high of Storm is to really tell the readers, I mean, the only way that they can, that look, what you have done, all those things that we had, you know, we were in the scene with what was happening in Storm. The culmination of that for civilians is just rampage, it's just devastation. And even as this rampage and devastation is going on, these idiot humans are still busy with their plotting, which is what he's doing with all those transitions. And which I did this time, if you do the feast and dance combined reading order, it comes through even more. At least for me, it did. And as I said, like, these things have a lot of meaning because to me personally, because he's not just telling a story, but he's also conveying meaningful themes which transcend the limitations of that particular story and that era. But he's not preaching. He's not saying, oh, war is so bad. And I mean, that would be very boring to read because we all know war is bad. And yet we see these things in the news every day. Some of us live through it if we are so unlucky. But he sort of does that through fiction, through this very strange quest, and whose result we know. And I wonder whether on the first read, I was very irritated. But on the reread, I was like, okay, I see why. So that was something that really struck out to me in Martin's writing and in his structuring.
Yeah, she has one up on us for rereading it like 5 times now. I was thinking, okay, I remember this. I remember half of it now, and now I'm not even quite sure what I remember because of how deep her explanation went.
I don't know about anyone else, but I read the first book almost 20 years ago now.
Yeah.
I read it almost when it came out.
Yeah, yeah. We all agree it's amazing. So I have to admit, thinking about the series again, I really want something like that again, like a series to see, to watch, or a movie that is like grandiose.
Did Wheel of Time not do it for you?
who are you again? What are you doing here? You know what I mean.
In fiction, very much, very much. I'm always, I'm conflicted. And Alex said Wheel of Time, so now I'm going to say, like, Wheel of Time is not what I want. And A Song of Ice and Fire, curiously, is what I want. And it would be nice to have that. I would say Berserk in some aspects does it, which is a manga, but it does not have the cast of characters and all the exploration of psyche and the little conspiracies here and there. And it's a very, very different experience.
I'm sad.
I would love to have something.
I'm sad to say Berserk animation isn't that great. So that is not really... the manga is amazing, but the animation, they really messed that up with the 3D effects and stuff like that. But right now, if you want an adventure like that, if you want something like that, you have to create it yourself, like playing, I don't know, Dragon's Dogma 2 or something. It is a hole that needs to be filled by something that has the budget and the correct writing team. But yeah, who, where, what, how?
I wanted to pick Steve's brain on this a bit because he has read the whole series and I've read the first 4 books. It's The Second Apocalypse by R. Scott Baker. And, or is it Baker? So I want to get
it's opinion. Baker, but everybody says it doesn't matter.
Baker. So this is also a series which has been praised for its writing and praised for its world building multiple times. It is much, much darker in tone than A Song of Ice and Fire. But in terms of world building and in terms of planning out everything, it has that depth. And again, another series which has sort of suffered this unfortunate culmination, where it's kind of run. It's not quite as bad as the situation with A Song of Ice and Fire, in the sense that with Prince of Nothing trilogy, you can stop. And then with the Aspect Emperor Quartet, you sort of get an ending, but from whatever little I read and whatever little I understood, it is a very, very difficult ending to accept. I mean, I can almost feel the new books in the offing, waiting to be written. So I wanted to ask about Steve, about, because he has read both these series, A Song of Ice and Fire and Second Apocalypse.
Right,
how do you feel about the unfinished status of work?
No spoilers, please, because I haven't read the quartet yet.
No.
I'm trying my best not to do any spoilers.
No spoilers. I think that the end of the Aspect Emperor series can be like an end. I think if it ends there, I'll be fine. So it's not, it doesn't really leave it. There's still more, but if it ended there, I'd be fine. Like, I feel like it's an ending. It's kind of, yeah. I feel like it would all be okay if it's never, we never get the rest of the books, but I think the us wanting like another Game of Thrones moment, like having that really, that thing that we all, that most people bonded over, that everyone was watching, everyone was involved with, everyone cared about. I think those things just happen organically. And when you make something like Wheel of Time, when you try to make it this big epic thing and you set these expectations for this is the next big thing. And it's like, you have to just, these things just happen on their own. You can't really, you know, conceive of it and then it make it this big cultural moment. It just happens organically. You can't force it. I think that's part of they're so desperate to make the next Game of Thrones and the next, have that big next thing, that it doesn't, you can't force that kind of thing. It just happens. So I think that's why I think we're a while away from another kind of a series like that, whether it's good or not. I think people have been burned too many times that they're kind of gotten cynical and kind of, no one wants to really be like, you tell me this is the next Game of Thrones, but I already don't like it, because you know, you already have that comparison. Yeah. Instead of just going in and saying, this is our story, and you go in with okay, this is something different. Instead, okay, this is the next Game of Thrones, and then it's not to that level or it's not the same. You'd kind of turn off. So I don't think you can force that kind of thing. But no, I think with the Second Apocalypse, I think I'm okay if it ends where it ends. But I know, you know, I would love to have more, but I'm okay if it ends there. But it's funny because I prefer the writing style. I know it's not for everyone. It's not very accessible to most people, but I do prefer the writing style in the trilogy than I do the second half. I think it's,
really?
I know he changed his writing style because of the feedback, but I guess I'm on the other side where I prefer.
We have almost opposite experiences, because I read The Judging Eye and I was like, yes, now it's happening. Now things are flowing in my brain.
Yeah, I think the second half is more accessible. I think it's more, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I just mean, I think it flows better. But I think the first trilogy is, and the thing is, the first trilogy, while I prefer it to the second half, the writing style anyway, I think the it's very, either it does it, either you love it or you hate it. There's not really an in between. Like, Susanna hated it. So I think it's one of those things where if you know, and which is fine. I just think it's the second half, I think, is more accessible. I think more people would be open to it, because it's just a different style.
Yeah.
I started watching The Expanse, and I can't remember why I started watching it, but I think it might have been Susanna's praise and somebody else on Discord. But anyway, in general, I started watching Expanse. And then later on, I learned that a lot of people sort of pitch it as Game of Thrones in space. I only watched up to season 2, episode 4, and I'm aware that the show only adapted 6 seasons. So for people who maybe read some of the books or all of the books, how valid is this parallel? Is it epic science fiction in the sense Game of Thrones is epic fantasy?
No.
Don't think so. I haven't read the books. I love the show. You can say there is intrigue.
No. Is the world building very deep?
Yes, not as deep as Song of Ice and Fire. Not even close.
No. But it doesn't need to be.
Yeah, exactly.
Deep enough. There's enough there. Yeah.
Alex and Thomas, have you guys seen or read The Expanse?
I've watched a bit of the first episode and then never got back to it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I watched little bit and didn't get back to it, too.
Oh.
It wasn't
not out of disinterest.
Yeah, it wasn't out of disinterest. I just never got to it.
Yeah.
The first couple episodes are kind of funky, but it does really find its footing. I think it's one of the rare times when the adaptation is better than the books.
Mm.
I don't know if that's a hot take, but it's this.
Are you serious?
Yes. Yeah.
And I think the TV show ends where the books should have.
Ouch.
Good to know. Yeah. Thank you.
I'm just saying. But because when I watched the show, it's like, well, this doesn't end where the books end. And then I went and read the books. And I was like, okay, I know why now.
But yeah, it's
might be
the
a hot take.
Strangest, I don't know, decision, I guess, to write those last books. But they were necessary to complete the story in a realistic way. But at the same time, it was hard. It was really hard to adapt.
The TV series is really good, though.
So,
yeah.
I quit season 2, episode 4. If you know, you know why I quit. I stand by that decision.
Heroes was too much for you.
A particular titular character doesn't make it, and I'm done. No.
I felt that way for me.
Susanna and I have extensively discussed about this, and we might discuss it in future again. But yeah, I was just like, bam, I'm out. How dare you do this to me? That was funny. It was sort of like what I should have done in Game of Thrones season 1. But over there, sorry, I haven't seen the show, so book 1. But over there, I felt terrible. But I also wanted to know what happened. Here, my reaction was so visceral. I don't know whether it was because of the character's performance. And I was really, really... I was like, this character needs to be there, not this early.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just like, I'm out.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
if
yeah.
If this performance is not there in successive episodes and some other things are going on, I'm out. There are two characters, basically. I'll phrase it this way so that the people who've seen the show, at least the first episode, and otherwise it's not a spoiler, it's just random stuff. So there's one character with a hat, and there's one character in a sari. And basically these two characters are the reason why I was watching the show. There's a third character as well who is aboard a spaceship, who is leading a sort of crew, you might say. So these are the three main characters that I was watching for. And anyway, something happens in season 2, episode 4, and I was like, I'm out. I'm big mad.
But that makes great drama.
I'm still mad.
If you feel like that, that makes that.
I agree, but I just can't watch the next episode without.
Well, then it's fine. Then it's like it ended there for me, and I'm fine with it. I don't have FOMO, yeah. And I don't want to know anymore. That's fine.
I kind of do have FOMO.
You're working against yourself here.
I know. Am I not doing that all the time?
Yeah, yeah, and us as well. You're like working against yourself and us. It's paramita against the world, plus one.
So you gave up on the Expanse TV show because a titular character died, but in the Song of Ice and Fire, a character dies like every other part.
Look, that's interesting. We were talking.
I don't get it either.
We were talking about this the other day. So I told Paramita that they were trying to pull a Ned Stark, but in The Expanse, it did not work because it really pissed a lot of people off. You know, it's not the same character. Ned Stark's character was done, was completed. It was sad, it was surprising and sad and shocking even, but it made sense in the expanse. It felt that was just, I mean, that's the point, but it was like, you said, like too soon or too, because that character was really taking a lot of, especially in the show, it was taking a lot of on his back. It was too much about him and you had to reassess. If there's any consolation, Paramita, it might not be the end. You know?
I know that.
So?
I mean, I know what...
Hey.
But I have to...
Spoilers? Anyone?
Oh. So the thing with me is I actually tell people, like, in the previous Friday conversation, after it ended, after the recording ended, I approached Steve and I was like, tell me actually what happens with this character at the end of Aspect Emperor. What happens? So I seek out spoilers.
Yeah, you can never you can never, even knowing, like, it's not completely the end, there's no way you'd ever guess what happens. So
yeah.
It's not, it's safe. whatever you're thinking, you're wrong. So it's like, it's not the typical what you'd expect at all.
Yeah. Mm.
But yeah, there, we did have a hashtag going on the Expanse read along that we were, well, I know I'm a big fan of a certain character that is in the show and in the book, and Holden, this isn't a spoiler, but Holden is insufferable in the books. He's much better in the show.
Oh, seriously?
He is awful.
Oh.
I rooted for him to die horribly every book. I was wishing he would die. I was like, I hope the books are different.
So funny. My question is, I mean, I know this is a bad parallel now, but like, is Holden supposed to be like Jon Snow?
Hmm.
Or no, not really.
No, see, it's different. I see the parallels, and I guess that has to do a lot with the writing itself, and of course, at least one of the authors he worked with, George R. R. Martin. So, one work clearly influenced the other. But to make those comparisons, no, it's not that linear at all. I think it's the wrong way to look at the series. Let it stand on its own.
Yeah, fair enough. The Holden is insufferable in the book because I really like character in the show. That's funny.
Yeah.
But, I mean, top two are the ones I said. The guy in the hat and the lady in the sari. I'm not taking opposing views.
Yeah. There's something.
Does anyone have any opposing views? Anybody hate one of these two?
No, not at all.
But there's something interesting that you're thinking the whole time, and even I said it right now with the new Game of Thrones thing. Like, everything gets compared to, if it's fantasy, it gets compared to Game of Thrones in a way, like they did for Lord of the Rings years ago. And I had the same feeling. So I said Twin Peaks earlier. I did not watch the show when it came out because I was way too young, obviously. So I missed a lot, as in you need to have watched it when it was like going on air way back when, because I just watched it now. I binged it this last week, first series, second series, and it was like, so Dark, Stranger Things, Silent Hill, whatever I could think of, like detective kind of thing, the upside down, what, yeah, it was like, wow, this all came from this one thing. So if you look it up, it's like everything Alan Wake now, detective wise, that is a bit supernatural, gets immediately It gets, I'm looking for the word. And everybody went silent. Excellent. Thanks. Thanks. You're a great audience.
Who would ever guess that a room full of like three authors in the room would be like,
Yeah.
Just like, we'll just let you flail out there. Like, we'll just watch.
I never remember words.
Compared to, that's the word I'm looking for. Everybody, thank you. So it gets compared to Twin Peaks. It's like everything. Every reference gets like, oh, is that a reference to Twin Peaks? Is that a reference to Twin Peaks? Like the Game of Thrones thing. Is it what is so wrong with us that is it wrong of us that we keep comparing things to other things, or is it just because it's been done before, it's no longer original? What is the feeling you guys get with that? Is it something wrong, or is it like, oh, that's cool? I don't know how to feel about it.
Is it us, or is it rammed down our throats by marketing departments?
Good question.
If you liked this, you will like this. And as we've mentioned before, this is the next.
Yeah. Yeah, and it bothers me. I know it's true for most of the things that I've seen and played or read, and that's okay. But like, yeah, it's the granddaddy of it all. Video games, a Souls-like. Oh, it's a Souls-like. Oh, great, thanks. Now I know how the game plays. No, I don't. It's
the amount of times I've been suckered in by this is the next BioShock.
Yeah.
And it never is.
Because BioShock is BioShock. There's nothing.
Yeah. Even the subsequent BioShocks weren't BioShock.
True.
I think we get to a point where that's just...
Oh, go ahead, Barmin. Sorry, Steve, but you finished.
Oh, no, I was just going to say just really quickly that I think we get to a point where when you compare something to something so much, like this is the next BioShock, this is the next Game of Thrones, this is the next whatever. At some point, I think readers or watchers will be like, whatever, I'm not going to bother, because everything is like the next this or that. So I think people get burned out on that. Like, I'm not going to bother because you've told me the last 15 things are like BioShock and I've been disappointed. So
yeah, I feel it lessens the experience. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It even happens in sport, and it's even worse in sport.
Mm.
I mean, watching the football,
Jordan.
Yeah. You get things like, this is the next, I don't know, the next Jack Grealish. And I'm sitting there thinking that Jack Grealish is still playing football. Isn't that a little bit insulting to Jack Grealish? He's still there.
He's not what what he used to be. I don't know. Because I like references. I like seeing TV shows or whatever that I'm like, oh, that's cool. They took this from that or something like that. But if you start like, yeah, he was inspired by and then he took a lot out of. I feel like I've watched this movie already. It's not going to do me anything. It's not going to make me feel anything anymore because I know this storyline. I know this.
I was going to say, first of all, that Netflix has a BioShock adaptation in the works.
Why?
And I don't know. I only provide factoids. The analysis is left to the others. But the second thing that I wanted to ask is because this has been like the feeling on the Discord servers I'm part of where people game as well. What was so good about BioShock?
The experience.
I've never seen anything about it. I don't know anything about it. Like, what was the magic of BioShock?
If we explain, it loses the magic. It's weird to say. It's the experience and the atmosphere that is created in that world. And if you know, you know.
It's the only game I can think of where I've consistently heard people saying, if I could wipe my memory so I could go back and play it again, I would.
And it doesn't mean that it's the greatest thing ever created. No, it was like something unique, something that hasn't been done before, something new, something, you know.
Is it the aesthetic or is it the depth of world building? Because the other game that I hear a lot about with regards to depth of world building is Elder Scrolls. And that is one where people say that the lore is really, really thought out. And I mean, people can go down hours.
To me, that's different.
Down rabbit holes with...
Okay. There is world building in BioShock, it's not comparable to me. I don't know for
Elder
for
Scrolls
the other guys.
Is an epic fantasy series. BioShock is a standalone masterpiece. That's how I would see it.
Did you like Infinite?
I played it. I did enjoy playing it, but it didn't have the same impact.
No, because it was like based on Twin Peaks, right? With Lighthouse.
It's been a little while, but Thomas, wasn't Skyrim a big influence for you? If I remember right?
Not really an influence, but it was a game that I really liked. Oh. I more so liked Morrowind, but...
Yes.
Yeah, I like the Elder Scrolls games.
The music alone, getting off that boat was...
And then just having no idea what to do next.
Yeah, and stealing everything from the pantry that you go through in the first door.
Wow.
I mean... Everything about that game was so like you're walking out of town, you walk in a certain direction, and then suddenly a guy falls from the sky.
I mean, yeah.
The story was so you had to read a lot. You had to make up your almost own story, like there was a narrative that you could follow, but most of it was experience, and that made it so immersive.
One of the worst things about the Elder Scrolls games is if you're one of those people like me that likes to try and complete everything.
Oh, you're screwed.
You're screwed. Yeah, there's too many side quests. I did platinum Skyrim, but that one was a fairly easy one to platinum compared to Oblivion and Morrowind. And I have got Daggerfell, but I haven't really got into that as much.
That is too big. That was... I think it's free, by the way, for people who are on Steam.
Yeah.
The HD version, you can just downloaded it for free, Daggerfall.
Yeah, you can.
And Arena?
I can't remember if I saw Arena or not.
Yeah. It's one of the biggest maps in games ever, I think, Daggerfall. But yeah, you have to really like your 2D sprites in a 3D world.
But yeah.
The other series... Yeah, sorry.
I really did enjoy playing them. I plowed hours into those games.
Yeah. It's the same for the other series they have, like Fallout. I mean, has everybody just watched a episode or have started? No, not going
finished
to.
Finished it.
Yeah.
No, Fallout 3.
No. The
reactions are very mixed.
Pleasantly surprised, Steve. Seriously.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the best thing ever, but I really enjoyed it. Even though it got slower, I was scared of it. Like, I saw the first two episodes, and then I reacted that it's going slower. And there's one character that is...
pointless?
Hmm?
What character that is pointless?
Oh, yes. Stupid, pointless, a knob. Seriously.
A knob.
But, I mean, I don't know how they pull this off. Budget, mm-hmm. obviously, but then again, I still have 10 minutes to go, but I know how it's going to end because it was obviously predictable, and not a lot of shows can surprise me anymore because I watch too much. That's another other issue, right? No? Nobody has that issue?
Mm-hmm. Oh, so much. Yeah.
Less in shows, but I mean, because with shows, it's usually DNS. I do not start only, but in fiction, it happens a lot, where 20% into the book, I can tell that this writing and the method of storytelling, I'm not even saying I can tell where it's going to go, but I can just tell that the feeling it evokes in me is that this is not going to stay with me, and I feel it just bogs me down. I can relate to what Joshua and Susanna are saying, even though it's in a different medium for me. I wanted to ask, I just thought of this question since we have three authors. I know about two of your influences. So I know Susanna loves mythology, and this is something she likes to explore in her fiction. And Alex has talked quite a lot about Lord of the Rings, about Shannara and Discworld. But I wanted to start with what Thomas was influenced by or inspired by to start writing. And then maybe we can go and ask Alex and Susanna once more.
For me, it was a whole bunch of things at a certain time. Like when I was, I don't even remember how long ago it was now, I got back into, renewed my interest in mythology after I read the Sandman comic books for like the third time. And then I started reading a lot of Irish mythology and Norse mythology. And then that kind of got me back into wanting to read fantasy again, which I hadn't done since I was like a kid. But I was always interested in epic fantasy across other forms of media. Like most like the movies and video games I liked was that style, just I hadn't really been reading it recently. And then that got me into Glenn Cook and the Black Company series and the Dread Empire series, which led to Malazan and Joe Abercrombie and all of that. And then it just spiraled from there. And finally, I decided I had to start writing stuff.
How was the Black Company? Because I've heard, I guess some people love it because they call it military fantasy, and some people hate it because it's military fantasy.
A lot of people also.
I read the first three books.
Go ahead, Thomas. A lot of people also refer to it as like the predecessor to Grimdark and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I loved it. I thought it was a great series. It definitely. I feel like at times it definitely shows its age. Like, I forget when the first book was written, but you could tell that it has, like, some of the writing has a little bit of, like, that classic fantasy tone to it, but at the same time, it's completely different, and it's definitely pushes, like, a different style. You can see how it influenced what became Grimdark. But, yeah, I'd definitely recommend it. It's the whole series is through a single point of view without saying anything else to avoid spoilers. It's a single point of view as if someone is journaling, like writing what happens for this company of mercenaries after the fact.
I can fantasy. Definitely see how that's in your work. Thomas, that's what that one, like the group and the, yeah.
So is it sort of a fantasy Full Metal Jacket?
I could see that. Yeah.
Cool. And then suddenly a dog.
Alex, tell us how or what made you want to start writing?
Sleep. I wanted to be able to get to sleep and I couldn't because things kept shouting at me. I read lots and lots and lots when I was younger and I had time. I used to only sleep a couple of hours a night because I'd just read, go to sleep for a couple of hours, wake up, read, and then go to school. Eventually, I think I just read so much that it just started to demand to be let out again. And I found I couldn't sleep at all because I just kept going, wouldn't it be great if we did, if this was in a book or if this was in a book? And then eventually lockdown happened in the UK over COVID and the company I worked for went to a 4-day week. So I had a whole Friday to think about something to do with. So I just started writing. And it's just carried on ever since then. I haven't stopped. It takes me a long time to write one book, but
I think it takes most people a long time to write.
I was thinking like it's not Patrick Rothfuss level of a long time, I think, or Martin.
Well, yeah, it's not. I'm not as bad as a Martin, but you know, I see there's some people I've seen who churn out a book every 6 months, and I'm sitting there thinking, how can you do that?
Do they though?
Maybe it's like I don't know. Maybe some people can write fast in some things. In our subfield also, you know, some used to be fast publishing fields, and some used to be very slow publishing fields. It just depends on what you're writing and the kind of story you're telling. Susanna, please tell us about what was there like a moment. Is this sort of a fictional construct where, you know, a writer sort of has this glorious moment where they just decide to create? Or is it something much more organic and something much more, you know, with a lot of more challenges, both internal and external?
I can only speak for myself. I mean, everyone's different. Alex was a different process. I always wanted to write. It was like, as a kid, I was always making up stories. I always read. But for a long time, it was just, you know, it was like saying, yeah, I would love to go to the moon one day. And I would love to, but that's not going to happen. And growing up, it was just that thing. Yeah, one day I'll write a book. Yeah, sure. One day I'll write a book. Why not? And then when self-published became available, I was just too busy. I had that idea at the time. And that's when I started thinking about it seriously. And I wrote some stuff then. It was about 10, 12 years ago. I was going through stuff, and it was more therapeutic than anything else, but still nothing serious. I only started paying attention of how to write because, you know, I would write conversations, dialogue, weird scenes, nothing. It was not a novel. And I wanted, when I moved to England, my English was terrible. I could understand everything, but I couldn't speak, and at my work, everyone was not a native English speaker, and it kind of created this dialogue, which I still carry on. But I realized, well, I can't live in this country if I don't speak the language properly. So I started doing exercises, and writing helped. And I ended up with a lot of stuff, and I was like, you know what, this is a good story. I need to investigate it further. And it wasn't until I moved to Ireland in a sort of semi-retirement, it didn't quite work out as we planned, that I had more free time. So as the house was being remodeled. That's when I had to do something. Like, I couldn't just watch, you know, 5-6 men coming over and knocking down walls. I just started to write. And yeah, a couple of years later, I had a book. I had more book than I knew what to do with it, actually. And yeah, I just kept on writing ever since. Especially after COVID, I had all the time, I wrote loads, and I still have, yeah, so many stories to revise and edit and put out there.
Nice.
Lovely.
Did you find, this goes to Susanna and Thomas, that once you started, it just carried on? You couldn't then switch off, and creativity mm-hmm. seemed to breed creativity.
Yeah, it's almost an addiction. You just have to try to let it out. To yeah, when I can't write, absolutely. Or even just kind of feel that urge.
And the worst thing is when you can write, I then find myself doing all sorts of things apart from writing. And as soon as somebody calls me away from it, I'm going, yes, but I should be writing now. I want to write.
That happens, but it is very rare, but it does happen. Some days, yeah, it doesn't work. And it took me a while to recognize those days, because it's just a waste of time. You're just sitting at the computer. Best case scenario, worst case scenario, you just go to social media and no. Go and read, walk, something. But it does happen. Some days I hate writing. You know, it's really like, no, I mean, I'm done. I hate this. I hate everything I write. I have nothing else to say. There's no point. No one's buying the book. I don't care. But they are very few and far between. I can't hold on to that feeling. Before I know it, I'm writing again.
Is that what you're describing, like ADD brain or something? Attention disorder?
It's not easy.
No, Alex.
Sorry.
Yeah, no problem. For you, I know you don't have that. You're like some. It comes and goes. Like you want to watch movies, and now I want to read a book, and now I want to play video games. So I understand that, but I have an extreme case of ADD brain and go like, I'm thinking about one thing, and at the same time, I'm thinking about the other thing. And if the other thing is more interesting, I'm gone. And I can't keep my brain in one line, which means I cannot bring out the story that is in me. I want to write, definitely. I really want to write. But every time I think about that story, I'm like, oh, this would be cool. This would be cool. And I want a muffin now. Am I going outside or am I doing something else? And I'm gone. So maybe I could write for 5 minutes, but I don't do it. I start procrastinating and do something else. But that's an idea. I don't know if Alex had the same thing and Thomas hasn't replied yet. So maybe somewhere else entirely.
I feel like a lot of the times I'll sit down and start writing, and if nothing's coming out right away, sometimes it's best to just do something else. But once you get typing or something like that and you hit a certain point, it just starts flowing and you have a harder time stopping than anything else. But if you're sitting down and staring at a blank screen for a few minutes, it might just be that you're not going to have anything right then. So why just sit there?
I tend to find a lot of my stuff that I write when it starts to flow is usually when I've got about an hour and a half left before I've got to pack up and go inside and watch something with the other half, because I promised I'd stop at 10:30. So I get to about 9:00 and all of a sudden I'm like, that's it. And then it gets to 10:30 and I don't want to stop, but I've got to.
I feel like my most creative time of the day is usually at 10 in the morning on weekdays while I'm at work and have absolutely no way to write whatsoever.
I think I did the same with the writer's battle as well. An awful lot of my stories were written almost on the last day because I didn't have any more time to put them off. I had to write them at that point.
Yeah.
Working under pressure works for some people. Especially time
Not
pressure.
Not me. I just block too much.
It may be because I'm a fundamentally lazy person, so if I don't have a deadline shouting at me, I'll just go, yeah, I'll do it in a minute. It's fine.
So you're a pokeche pokeche. That's a Aztec for lazy farmer.
Yeah. The crops will grow. It'll be fine. What do you mean I've got an hour left? Right.
I would imagine it's tough to put so much time and effort into writing and editing and formatting and all that stuff. And then you set it out there in the world and it's like, what now? Like it's almost like half, that's only the first half of what it takes to write a book. And I guess there is, of course, there's satisfaction of having the book out. And it's like, I did that. But then, of course, you want people to read it because it's like, I spent all this time. I want people to enjoy it and give me feedback and engage. You know, you want people to read what you created or to, that must be really tough to have that. Like, you know, where do I go from here now that it's done? Like, it's like the journey has just started almost, seems like.
Well, I haven't ventured down the self-published route yet. But I can say that querying with agents is horrific. And even a positive rejection, even when they come back to you, and one agent did come back to me and say, there's a lot to like about this. And I was thinking, great. And then the very next line is, but I don't think it's right for me. I don't think I'll be able to sell this. I'm so, well, clearly there wasn't enough right about it then, was there? Thanks for nothing. I mean, it
wasn't Game of Thrones enough. It wasn't the next Game of Thrones.
No matter how hard you stretch it, it can always be Game of Thrones meets something.
Nice. Oh, dear.
Someone's got to write Game of Thrones meets Garfield.
Oh, there's an idea.
With Odie as Jamie Lannister.
Chop up, yeah. Meme him. Yeah, I just and then I wonder too, like if you do. If you're not a big name, like a big known author, does a publisher really help you that much? I mean, do they really? Because I've heard some people have gotten a book deal and they say the publisher publishes it, but it's like, okay, you're on your own. Like, market it. We'll distribute it. We'll get it out there, but it's up to you to push it and kind of just like you're on your own. So I wonder, you know, I don't know if any of you have experience with that, but kind of like, what does a publisher do for you really? Like, what? Is it, I don't know.
Basically, do just pay for it and get it out there. They will do some limited marketing. And obviously, the more famous you are, the more marketing they'll do because they know they will sell it if they market it, if you're famous. But from what I've heard, if you're a debut author, you'll get a very low or no advance. They will pay for editing. They will pay for the artwork. They will pay for the printing. But a lot of the marketing is up to you as the author to get it out there.
Yeah, but they get the books to stores. That's our, you know, biggest difficulty. Mm. So sure, they are available to be ordered through Ingram's Heart, for example, but the shops need to ask for them. You know, it's very, very hard to get into bookstores without the publisher.
I see. So you mean that a lot of titles are there on Amazon, but how does someone know how to search for the particular author's book?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if it's self-published, because all of them, and then over there, the traditional publishers have an edge in that I go to a physical bookstore. This has happened, and even recently, the new entries will be there, as you said, because the publishers get them into bookstores, which is much, much harder with the visibility aspect, I guess.
Mm-hmm. So marketing becomes a little bit easier when you have visibility and when you have a name behind your work as well, that it's not just your own.
Yeah.
I guess if you...
I have...
This is why I like...
Yeah. Three people at once. No,
go ahead. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Who's going? Paramita, let's go.
No, I was going to say something incredibly facile, superficial, so you both go.
Yeah, for me, it was just going to be one joke. Like, I have enough self-doubt that I don't need a publisher or an agent to doubt me or doubt my work. It's fine. I don't need anybody else to criticize me. That stress level, I can't.
I have a question for authors, I guess for everyone here. Is it criticism that hard? Like, I mean, of course, it really sucks to get bad criticism. It really sucks when someone doesn't like your work, especially if it's someone whose opinion you care about. But the escalation, it's insane. The people really melt down over this, and then there's all these rules. Oh, don't rate my book if it's not 5 stars, or don't do this, or I don't want to read reviews. I don't want. Really? Is it really that hard? I come from, I work in circles and aerial skills a lot. I work with Russian ballerinas, and trust me, you have not been criticized until the Russian ballerina goes through every inch of your body and every movement you make. And, you know, people will tell you, your face, if you did something wrong or it wasn't, they will tell you to stop, they'll tell you it sucked, they will tell you to go, and, you know, don't come back until you can hold your own weight for 30 seconds, kind of thing. And it wasn't because you were being mean, because best case scenario, it would cost money or an embarrassment. Worst case scenario, someone would die because you failed to spot them or drop them or whatever. So there was no room to pander to, oh, it looks great, you know, but try to do this instead. No, nothing. So I understand maybe my tolerance for criticism is a little bit higher than most. But I find that some people are so, so averse to it that you can't even have a conversation about it. And you can't improve without knowing what is wrong. And it might, you know, and someone's opinion doesn't mean that it's the law, that that's the thing that it's wrong. You know, if you're just going to, with one opinion, well, that's not going anywhere. If there's a pattern of opinions, then you need to pay attention. But people can't even differentiate that. And it's really hard to talk about, even amongst authors. I am afraid to say anything less than, your book is amazing, because it's just going to be awkward. I recently had a very awkward situation with another author. And I didn't think I was that critical, but, you know, they ask for my opinion, and gosh, it's hard every time. I'm walking on eggshells. I don't understand.
I'll just be happy to get a book out there. If everybody hates it, that's up to them.
Yeah, yeah. I don't have an issue. I'm my own worst critic, and that's my issue. As in, before it's even out there, before it's published, before I even have written anything, I'm criticizing my work already. If it's out there, it's out there. Then I can let it go. That's something I can, that I know I can.
Well, based on Twitter, most authors seem to have a healthy dose of imposter syndrome and self-doubt.
Yeah. I've been reading this book, just like a buddy read on Discord. It's called On Writing. It's a memoir as well as sort of, you can say, tip. Very conversational tip by Stephen King. And in one chapter, he's like, he's talking about different parts of the writing process. And he says that have one person, at least the ideal reader, he calls. And in his case, it's his wife, Tabitha, which is very sweet, which I found very, very endearing. But I mean, she will call it out like she sees it. She's not going to, you know, sort of mollycoddle him and say, oh, but this is very good and all that. If it needs to go, it needs to go. And I think that comes from that sense of deep personal belonging as well, that if, you know, if it's got to be harsh and if it's got to be brutally brought down, then might as well happen in the confines of a private space than a public one, when it's, the book is out there in the world for others to see. And he talks about having this circle of people you trust, of people whose reading taste you trust to read the book. And then he says exactly what Susanna says. He says that if you get 6 to 8 differing opinions, then it is on you how much of that you take on board. But if you have 6 to 8 people saying the same thing, then it's a pattern. And it is probably worth at least thinking about addressing that. I do commend authors personally, because I'm a bit stubborn as well, that, you know, authors who just say no. Even if 6 or 8 people say that, no, this is something wrong, if they still stick to their guns, more power to them. But all Stephen King is saying is maybe you should think about it once. And I think that's a healthy position to have. Regarding criticism, I would say it depends a bit on, I mean, again, I don't know how bad it is when you have put like a part of yourself out in the world. A creative project is like that. But I'm speaking just from a general, you know, general criticism about, let's say, something I wrote or something I posted or the way I talk. And if it depends on the state of mind I'm in. Sometimes I'm a bit more fragile than other times. And when I'm a bit more fragile, I tend to take things a bit more personally. There are a lot of other times when the exact same thing I would have laughed off. Mm-hmm. I'd have been like, ah, whatever, let me just log off for tonight and sleep it over, and next morning I'm fine. But there have been one or two instances where a particular comment, and this is mainly in sort of private bookish spaces, where a comment has really got to me. It's like, what? I'm leaving. Bye. And that is a very, very juvenile reaction. I mean, in hindsight, I have regretted it. But it's done. The only thing I can do is learn from that and try not to act on that visceral negative reaction I'm having. Try to, like, sort of remind myself that, is it me? Is it because I'm having a bad day today that I'm reacting to this so much? But sometimes, I have slipped.
Mm-hmm.
So for me personally, it just depends on the fragility. If the negative, especially if it's a bad faith negative thing that hits me at a time when I'm not doing great, the combination doesn't go well.
Yeah, that happens sometimes. Yeah, you know, sometimes you can't help it. You get offended. You get upset. You know, it's part of the range of emotions and reactions of the human behavior.
Yeah.
You know, because I know I am guilty. I really, whenever I feel that way, I cannot go near the keyboard. Not even to write, because everything I write in that mood is usually horrible. I have to edit it a lot. So I can't be near a keyboard.
I'm still not sorry, Paramita. I'm still not sorry.
I like to think I'll be all magnanimous about criticism of any of my published stuff if it ever gets published. But I also can't help think of the last scene of Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, where they download everybody's name who criticizes the movie and visit them all.
Oh, man, that brings me back. What a movie.
Yeah.
Give me Clerks or Clerks 2, but nuts.
I just thought of a quick sort of maybe interesting question for authors, and then maybe even from readers here, if they've been asked. Just going off of what Stephen King said, to have sort of this trusted circle to get to read your first draft or your manuscript, not first draft, but the manuscript that you're ready to sort of go to the next stage. What do you look for in your beta readers? And readers, what do you think about when agreeing to a beta reader role if you get asked? Or if you are able to volunteer.
I'll take whatever dates can get me. Everyone criticizes differently, let's put it this way. Like for Weird Gods, I had this questionnaire, and I ended up noticing that people were too focused on trying to guess what was the right answers, or you know what, how to fit their criticism within those answers. So I stopped doing that. So I always say, you know, tell me anything, everything and anything, including if you stop, just tell me where you stopped and why, you know, what's wrong. And some people just tell me general stuff about the plot or just the general impressions. Others are very detailed. And you just have to work with it. You know, sometimes I ask questions back, try, can you please explain what you mean by this or by that? And I work with whatever feedback I get, try to make the best of it.
Do you have criteria for the people you ask, or is it a set, maybe some people rotate in and out depending on the book?
I don't have a lot of better readers for it. It's just whoever is interested, people that I trust reading tastes or at least the reading ability, and if they're interested, I'll take it. You know, but I would never take more than two or three. Then there's too many opinions, I guess.
I'm just going to do what I did for the healer. I'm just going to chuck a comment on the beta readers page on Page Chewing and see who bites. And that will be my beta reader pool.
Mm-hmm. I missed that one. You don't want me. It's fine, Alexis.
Well, it won't be long now until the beta reader request will be going up for Carpentry in the Elven Forest. Although I have been convinced to get it edited before it goes to beta readers this time. Last time I did beta readers, then edit. This time I'm going to edit, then beta read.
Okay.
I don't know if that is the correct way to do it or if my editor is just eager to be the first one to read it. I'm not sure.
I kind of prefer, because editing is expensive and there's always changes after beta read. I would do my own editing, which is sloppy enough, but you know, it puts it in reading condition, and after it's revised, after the having feedback from better readers, and then yes, because editing is expensive. It's almost the last step. Editing, proofread, done.
How about you, Thomas? How do you approach, do you seek beta readers? How do you approach?
I have not yet, because when I released my first book, I had no idea what the hell I was doing. And then I had that problem of having my first book be a series, and who's going to want to beta read the second book of a series they haven't read the first one of. So that's going to be something I'm probably going to go the same route as Alex and post some on the Page Chewing forum, because the other series I started recently, I just did because I was trying to rush it out for an event I have next week. But all the books are standalone, just set in the same world. So for the next one in that, I think I'm probably going to put it up there on the forums to see if anyone wants to beta read it.
Nice.
Work for me. Thank you.
How do you? Sorry, go ahead.
It's worth saying that both Paramit and Joshua better read OBA. So they are troopers. Yeah. Thank you.
Steve, how do you are you at the stage where you need to filter beta reader requests? do you volunteer as a beta reader? Do you get asked? Are there things that you will think about when, I guess you can extend this to when applying for NetGalley ARCs, if you do. NetGalley has advanced reader copies for things. So.
No, not
interested. You don't do that.
I'm not a good beta reader.
I was just going to say this. I'm a very bad beta reader, and you can see this in my Goodreads reviews. Most of them are just like the star rating. I'm like, yeah, this book was good. This book was great. This book was terrible. Usually the book that I hate, I have a lot to say about, but I don't put it on the public. It's there in the status update. Or, yeah, the most common one is the book was mid. I read it. It was fine. Bye. So I'm just a terrible beta reader, and I feel so bad. And this does not bode well, because two authors currently present in this conversation have asked me to beta read the novel, and I'm so sorry.
But you're so opinionated. That's excellent. That's what they need.
Yeah.
That you don't write it, sure, but you if you talk about it like you're doing now, you are very opinionated and have insights on conversations in books that I wouldn't even have thought of.
Steve, why are you a terrible
Wow, deflection.
Yeah. Yeah, spotlight over. I think it's the same. Like I think when I put on my editing brain, because I used to edit a lot of stuff, people used to ask me to look over their things in school and things like that, and I'd be really particular. But when I read, I don't have that kind of mindset. Like, I don't have I'm looking for something wrong, or I'm looking for this, or I'm looking for that. I just kind of get lost in whatever I'm reading. I don't really have the red marker kind of, I'm looking for things that are wrong. I just kind of enjoy it, like, for what it is, and I don't really have that mindset, because I think it takes a lot of effort to be an effective beta reader. I think it's not easy. I don't think it's easy to do.
That's perfect, the thing you do. I mean, you're reading it like it should be read, and then at a certain point, if you get out of it because something stops you from reading any further, like something in a story that you're like, I don't think this feels right or whatever, you get that feeling because you're either in a story or you're out. I mean, so that's perfect, no?
That is exactly we want from Better Reads. Not an editor. You don't need anyone to go and scratch. If you do that, that's fine, but it's more to get that feel, to let us know where things don't work, where they work, and especially where things don't work.
Yeah, I just think for most things, I think I'm not overly critical of a lot of, there's things that I really like and there's things that I enjoy, and I don't think I like the characters. It was funny, or it was this or that. And it's like, yeah, it worked for me. Like, it was cool. I had a good time. And they're like, okay, what else? I'm like, well, I don't know. I just think I think it's cool when, there's an opportunity, but I'm not sure I'm the best person for feedback like that. But I don't know. It sounds like, maybe I had a misinterpretation of what author's looking for. So
you're just trying to talk yourself out of extra work. I understand. It's fine, Steve.
Hey, I had the exact same feeling as Steve. I was like, I'm going to be so useless. But okay, so in my defense, when Alex and Susanna asked me, I wrote a detailed response to both of them saying, look, this is how I usually give feedback and it's probably going to be useless. I'm very happy to read the book, but is that okay? And they were both like, yeah, it's fine.
But
in my defense,
sometimes
I put forward my caveat.
Sometimes all you need to hear is someone to say, yeah, this is a good story. It works. It does. I read it to the end. It didn't fall over at any place. It didn't take me out of the moment.
That's quite a high bar. Okay. If you get that from a better read, you get lucky to get it. This scene worked really well. Oh, I like this character. The whole thing being perfect from the get-go, no, that never happened.
That's the ideal situation. That's what you're aiming for. Nothing else? Excellent.
Yeah, that's maybe...
Straight to print.
Straight to print. I have a fun question related to this. If there was just one book you could beta read, and that means you can't beta read anything else. For authors, obviously not like your own works or other people you already beta read for. Something like very aspirational, something very out of reach. If there was one book you could beta read and you don't get to beta read anything else, what would it be and why?
I think 99% is going to say Game of Thrones or something. No?
Something
the next
like that.
Martin work.
Yeah, I would love to beta read that. Yeah, any read would be fine. Yeah.
Beta, Gamma, anything. Okay, for me, the answer is... Oh, who can guess
the
my
next
answer?
Tolstoy? Oh wait, he's dead.
The next roughest book.
No, the roughest book. Yeah. No.
I would be a terrible beta reader. I would be a terrible beta reader. So no, I want to read the next novel by Donna Tartt.
All right.
Who is my favorite living writer? I mean, just to be able to see it is, and it would probably mean like some kind of correspondence with her. I would just send a hugely adulatory message.
That is stalkery from you. That is creepy. Sorry. That's borderline stalker, Paramita.
it was going to be a very like heartfelt handwritten letter.
Hmm. Yeah, like the is it the guy or a girl that sent Harry Styles like 8,000 letters in a month? Well, what was it?
8,000?
Oh, no.
That's a lot of postage.
Yeah, maybe they're all heartfelt. I don't know. He or she is going to jail right now. Just saying.
Way to... I would still say final Donna Tartt novel. If the Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell sequel ever happened, probably that would be the other one that I would love to read. Because Rothfuss is one he has to solve himself. There's nothing. And even when it comes out, I'm so terrified that either his solution is something that I think it is, which is this great ambitious thing, or it is the other thing, which I can't bear. Like, I would be so crushed. I would not volunteer for that.
My answer might surprise you. My answer, I would love to beta read the next Stephen King book. So I can tell him this is too wordy. You're over descriptive for no reason. Cut it by like 300 pages and we're good.
Ouch. That is mean.
Preemptive criticizing right
like,
there.
Like he cares what I think. He's Stephen King. He won't care.
No, but I mean, that's what if it is not wordy? And what if it, you know, is incredibly tightly plotted?
Stephen King, it'll be wordy. Name one book of his that couldn't be cut by at least 100 pages and tell the same story. You can't. It doesn't exist.
The Green Mile.
Oh, I haven't read that one.
The Green Mile.
Short stories, you can cut them in half. His short stories are novellas. They're not short stories. Don't get me started. Anyway, Thomas, what about you?
This is funny.
I don't have anyone in mind. I'm fine with just waiting till it's in its final form.
I thought you named the next Abercrombie book, The Demons, or what is it called?
Devil.
Oh.
Yeah.
Devil.
I was not even... I heard something about that recently, but I don't know. Is it's a whole new series or something? Or?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can't wait.
But yeah, still, I'm fine with waiting until it's in its final form and then reading it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't dare to criticize Abercrombie, I think. Yeah, I would be like Parameter, just gushing. This is amazing. This is amazing. Art. Yeah. Yeah, I would be a terrible.
What about Winds of Winter? What if you don't want to criticize Abercrombie, what happens if you get Winds of Winter to, you know, critique, or not critique, but bitter, and give your thoughts?
I would be highly intimidated, for one. I don't think I'll be able to criticize anything prose-wise. I have my opinions about the plot and my theories, so I might try to nudge in that direction in case I was wrong or too far off. But that's pretty much it.
Just remember, he's that old that he might not survive your criticism. Just saying, just putting it out there.
Oh my god! Who knew? Like, we all thought Backer was the king of Grimdark, but who knew that we were actually harboring the true monarch on the page chewing forum, main Joshua.
Yes. My Grimdark has a lot more realism in it. Real people could die from this. So.
We really need to have a First Law universe discussion one day.
Because
I would be on the other side of all of you.
I want to join as well, but I've read 3 full books, 2 half books, and 1 quarter book.
Sure. As long as we leave out that one book that I don't like, it's fine.
Heroes.
Okay.
Heroes. Or which book is it? No?
Best Served Cold?
Yeah.
It's my comfort read.
I know. So I'm leave that one out.
I'm getting really scared here.
I'm so surprised.
Best of Cold is your comfort.
Why are you surprised?
Because Susanna is like anti Grimdark, and like Best Served Cold is your comfort read.
That was the least Grimdark book, I think.
I'm surprised.
I find it very cathartic. Yeah.
It was the power fantasy book from A to B.
I like the first trilogy, except for the end. The rest of it.
Oh, nice. Ooh.
I liked the first book. Second book was okay. Third book was okay. And I wouldn't volunteer to reread it or... like necessarily, yeah, like that thing, it doesn't evoke that, oh my god, I must reread this, or oh my god, I want to tell somebody who likes fantasy to read this. A similar kind of fact. That thing never came. But then who cares about my opinions? I'm partially dead inside, blah, blah. Everybody knows it.
Agreed, Paramita, agreed. I'm trying to stay positive here. Hello. Yes.
Very positive.
Yes.
I appreciate it.
I hope you do.
Pretty good.
Now, the whole conversation there is going to be like, you either like his writing style. It reads fast, and you like the story, where it's going, and stuff like that. There's not really that much. It's not like a Martin book. It's not like it's simplistic in its form, and that's why I loved it.
I think Susanna is going to now Susanna knows how I was feeling when Kingkiller was being described. People are like, oh, this is why sort of YA-ish and sort of simplistic, and I'm like, hell no. No, first law is like, it's simplistic.
Be glad, like, I didn't really? Go like Steve was. Oh, Stephen King, they can lose 100 or 200 pages. I think those books can lose at least 700 pages each for the
wow.
Kingkiller Chronicles. Same for everything Robin Hobb ever published. What? Like 700 pages, just cut every book and it would be perfect.
Harsh. Okay, that one I don't know. But what about Ross? That's really harsh. I mean, Life Chip is 900. You want to cut? I can get on board cutting half, but 700 wow. is wow. me.
I got her really halfway there. That is still a lot, though.
Yeah, I mean, Wiseman's Fear, I will say it can be cut by 300 pages. Yeah. Easy. Easy. And that's
now,
one of my
now,
most favorite
Stephen
fantasy
Erickson,
series.
Stephen Erickson, on the other hand, needs those 1,000 pages. kidding. I know.
Joshua,
I am trying to start
here.
A fire here. It's it's going well for me.
Thomas likes Malazan, so I'm going to, and I think Steve also likes Malazan, so I'm going to be.
I will say
quiet.
It's one of my
semi-quiet.
Favorite series. Go ahead and shit talk it as much as you want.
I really like the series as well, and I don't see anything cut from there. No, I don't see it, Paramita. I don't. Try to make a case for yourself.
I need to find that, you know, dog gif where it's wearing glasses and just stares and goes, really?
But that's so Twin Peaks of Stephen Erickson. I mean, come on. No.
Deep breathing, meditation.
I almost broke her.
Very important.
Almost.
We're nearly there. Come on. Someone give that last push.
I'd notice that we're almost on 2 hours already, but the time flies. But. So to wrap up, I want to hear what everyone just finished, what book everyone just finished, and what they thought about it. Who wants to go first?
Me, because I haven't finished any book this year. Yeah, next one.
How dare you?
I'm not in my reading habit right now. Sorry.
That's okay.
Well, I recently... Sorry,
I was just going to take the defense of I've almost finished writing a book this year.
Good excuse.
Well, I finished The Count of Monte Cristo, which was very nice. Good, much better than I remember. I read it years and years ago in Portuguese, and I got the English version. Oh, it was so good. I was having a blast. And I will mention that I'm almost finishing with Dragonfire. I love the Dark Prophet saga so much. It's hilarious. It's one of the few books that I just giggle to myself. I'm listening to the audiobook and I'm just giggling around the house constantly. It's, well, chuckling more than giggling. But yeah, it's really funny.
All right.
Oh, I did read a book. I did. I read a book. No. I read Murders in the Rue Morgue by Edgar Allan Poe.
Oh, cool.
Because Barometer made me read it.
I think Varsha and Paramita are both bullies of the forum. I think they're both like...
They are definitely.
Yeah.
Bullying
they
people.
Are. Yeah.
Me? Like, never.
I want to organize something with pitchforks and fire. No?
I'm like the most innocent person. Like, in what I share factoids.
Joan of Arc thought the same, and yet that's they burned her. I mean, come on.
What about you, Thomas? What did you finish last?
I actually just had to look it up because it's been a little while. I read very slowly and have not been good about it recently. The last thing I read was The Sword Defiant by Gareth Hanrahan, which was a great audiobook, and I look forward to continuing the series. But I also finished that well over a month ago, I think. And I've been listening to the audiobook of Susanna's The Weird Gods, and
awesome.
Which is excellent so far, but I've only been listening to it in small increments at a time, so I should have been done with it by now. But I find myself recently, when I start listening to something, and then just like things at work distract me, and I'm like, okay, I'm just gonna shut this off because I don't want to listen to it if I can't pay attention to it. So I think I got about 5 hours left to it, and I will be finishing that soon. But it's great so far, and I already know I'll be going on with the series after that.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And you chose the best version. Sarah Kempton is amazing. She did such
She does a great narration too. Yeah,
it's an excellent audiobook. Fantastic. So yeah, the last book I finished was Acceptance, the last book in the Southern Reach trilogy, and I have many thoughts. Most of them aren't very good, but overall the trilogy, I enjoy the trilogy. But yeah, I really disliked the book at first, but then now that I have some time, now that I talked to Parmeetha about it, I feel a bit better about it, but still kind of a bummer. But yeah, so anyway, everyone got really quiet. But Alex, where can people find you?
I kick around on Twitter every now and then. I'm mostly on the Page Chewing forum, and every now and then on Blue Sky as well. And everywhere I go, I'm known as a Frog in Time.
How is Blue Sky? Is it okay, or is it just like a Twitter clone?
It's less, what's the word I'm looking for? It's less snide than Twitter. There's less arguments, but it's largely nonsense.
It's Twitter too, right?
Yeah.
What about you, Susanna? Where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Chronodendron, on my YouTube channel, and at the Page Chewing forum.
And just want to mention really quickly, I saw earlier that, Susanna, you are featured on Vero.
Again? Yeah. I never get certifications. Awesome.
Yeah, you're under community culture.
I haven't opened Vero today, so that's quite a treat. I noticed that a couple of people followed me, and that rarely happens, so I guess that explains it. I need to check it.
Awesome. Great. Nice. Cool. Oh, it's cool. It's cool to see that. And Thomas, where can people find you?
I can be found if you reach out. I'm not using them often, but I check them on Twitter at Stone and Shield. I have a website that I update infrequently, fallofemros.blogspot.com. And if by weird, unlikely chance anyone is listening to this that's in like the Hudson Valley region of New York State, I will be at the Kingston Independent Comics Expo next Saturday, the 27th, releasing The Scroungers, my new novella.
Oh, cool.
Awesome.
And this episode is going live today, so it is really perfect. Next week. Yeah, so
on the Saturday, the 27th.
Nice.
There might be a person that lives around within an hour of here.
Yeah. So So if you do, listen to this, go be sure and tell Thomas that you heard it.
Nice.
And Parmita, where can people find you?
People can find me on the Page Chewing forum, and I log in there pretty frequently. And congratulations on the new book release, Thomas.
And Joshua.
Same as Parmita on the, and the rest, of course, on the Page Chewing forum.
Nice. Yeah, come by and say hello and tell us how wrong we are about all these things we talked about. just tell us, just come hang out with us. So hope everyone has a great weekend. Hope your week wasn't as bad as mine was. Here's to next week being better, and we'll talk to everyone very soon.